Good morning. Boy, Texas weather. One minute we are freezing cold and I have on three layers of clothes standing outside to having to find my shorts again. It's not complaining. Believe me, where I grew up in Oklahoma and then later in Wisconsin, this time of year we'd probably have about 2 feet of snow by now and be not freezing but 30 below freezing. So definitely am not complaining about this weather at all. Now, some people, they're born with a calm, peaceful spirit. And then there are people, well, like me. I've been competitive, I'd probably say, since birth. I mean, embarrassingly competitive. There's, I don't know, something inside of me that can turn anything into a form of a contest. Laundry folding. That's probably be an Olympic event for me. Walk in the car, oh, that's a 50-yard dash. Carrying groceries, let me tell you, strong arm man competition there. Always have to carry more than whoever it is that's with me. And at the moment when anyone else is having to work with me, well, that no longer becomes just a task, but that becomes a championship round. I remember this one day, this is actually, I think last summer, my coworker Emily and I were tasked with just taking some papers and sorting them by grade level. Now, I noticed that there was actually an even amount. So now for anybody, this would probably be just a normal, you know, routine, innocent, harmless, normal task. But in my mind, oh no, it was destiny. This was the moment that the heavens were going to open and declare that I was going to be the paper sorting king of the world. And truth be told, I actually won. I think I beat her by about maybe 30, 45 seconds. Now, a normal person, they'd probably go, yeah, good job, Wilson. Not me. For some reason, out of nowhere, as soon as I put that last one in there, noticed I beat her, I screamed out loud, I win! So loud that I think the entire school probably heard me. Poor Emily, she turned and looked at me. She goes, you okay? I go, oh, I'm good. And then she looked again and noticed, and figured out, and she's like, oh, come on, Jason, really, again? Yep, that's me. Because, you know, nothing improves your spiritual maturity like turning administrative tasks into competitive warfare. Now, I'll be honest, competitiveness, that's always been a part of my personality. Even long before adulthood. I was blessed and got to go to a private school called Emmanuel Christian School in my little town in Oklahoma. And we'd have every year a little play here and there. And this one year we were doing, I believe it was Joshua and the Battle of Jericho. Now, of course, even 9-year-old me, there was only one role that I could be, and I'm sure you can guess what that was. That's right, it was Joshua. Because, you know, I did not want to be a person holding the wall, and I definitely didn't want to be soldier number 4. Nope. I was not trying to be some random Israelite handing out snacks during intermission. No, I wanted the trumpet. I wanted to tell everybody when to start marching. I wanted, I guess you could say, the spotlight. But there was a problem when it came for the audition time. If I recall right, I actually kind of forgot that the day of the audition, that was even going to be an audition that day. So I hadn't studied at all. I didn't look over the script. I didn't do anything. I knew the basic concept of Joshua and Jericho, but I did not have the script memorized or learned or looked over. So the 9-year-old me decided that he would take a 3-page script of dialogue, and within 10 minutes, I somehow learned and memorized every single line. Now, the crazy part about that is nobody had to memorize their lines. We could all read from the script itself. But hey, me, 9-year-old me, there is no way I was going to read from the script. A real actor had to learn and memorize. He got up there and just presented it. And I got the part. Yay me. Now, later on, came to my mind, I thought, like, you know what? I honestly I don't think I remember a single other kid even auditioning for the part of Joshua. So it is entirely possible, just possible, that the only person I was really competing against for that role was myself. A story makes me have to ask a question, and the one that I want to ask today, when we are in life, what is pride? When is there a difference between pride and being competitive? Or is there even a difference? But most important is, what does the Bible say? Now, if you have Bibles you want to reopen up, I want to reread what Jonathan so eloquently read earlier. We're going to look at Galatians 6, 3 through 4. Now, when you're done with that, you want to bookmark it. We're going to come back. We're going to try to take all the context, 1 through 5, in it. But I want to focus right now on 3 through 4. Again, it says, if anyone thinks they are something when they are not, they deceive themselves. Each one should test their own actions. Then they can take pride in themselves alone without comparing themselves to someone else. You know, at a first glance, Paul, he almost sounds a little contradictory, doesn't he? At first he says, don't be prideful. But then later he says, take pride in yourself. So which is it, Paul? Is pride good? Is pride bad? Which one is it? Make up your mind. Well, I think Paul is actually drawing an incredible but important distinction. First of all, pride is self-deception. It thinks they are something when they are not. Pride lies to you. It inflates you. It blinds you. Pride makes you believe you're better, higher, and more important than anyone and everything else around. The second, I think he's trying to tell us that there is something called healthy competition. It's self-evaluation. That's when you test your own actions, not anyone else's actions. Not the scoreboard, not your neighbor next to you, not the other person in the pew, but you test your own actions. Paul is saying, check your heart, your motives, your spiritual foundation, your obedience, your character. Pride, you see, it compares you to others, whereas competition compares you to your potential. This is what I like to call a heart matter. Pride always drags others into the question or into the equation. It makes you say, am I better than them? I did more than they did. I'm holier than they are. Why in the world did that person get the promotion and I didn't? They didn't deserve it. I did. You see, pride, it needs an audience, whereas competition, it needs a goal. Competition seeks growth. Pride, however, is about winning, being first at all costs, no matter what. Whereas godly competition is more about stewardship. And I think that's exactly what Paul means when he says, take pride in yourself alone, without comparing yourself to anyone else. Meaning, don't measure your worth by others. Don't measure your calling by others. Some are called to be ministers. Some are called to be singers. Let me tell you, I am not about to measure my singing ability to Candace or Jeff. I'd lose all day long. It tells you not to measure your value by competition. Instead, we need to measure our life by God's standard, not human comparison. Now, I said we're going to jump back in Galatians, so we're going to go look at the context, because I think it's important, because Galatians 6, 3, 4 is part of a larger teaching about how Christians are supposed to treat one another. Let's walk through it really quick. Galatians 6, 1, Paul talks about restoring others gently. You who are spiritual should restore that person gently. See, pride, it can't restore anybody gently. Pride says, look at what you did wrong. I would never do that. You should be more like me. Your sin makes me look better. But the Spirit, it says, your fall is my opportunity to show love. Your weakness is my chance to be strong for you. I'm here to lift you, not to judge you. Pride, it likes to kick people when they're down, whereas humility, it reaches out to pull a person up. Then in Galatians 6:2, Paul says, we need to carry each other's burdens. It says, carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. Pride never carries anything but its own ego. Pride says, I don't have time for your problems. I don't want to get involved. That's, you know what, that's not my issue. Let me wash my hands clean from it. I don't want to get dirty because of what you've done. Why in the world should I carry your load? I got my own I need to carry. But humility, it says, I'll walk with you. I'll listen. I'll pray with you. I will shoulder your weight. I will be Christ to you. The law of Christ is a law of love. Whereas pride, it breaks that law. Whereas humility then fulfills it. Then in Galatians 6:3, Paul says, to pride blinds you. If anyone thinks that they are something when they are not, they deceive themselves. Pride creates a distorted image of who you are. It inflates your reputation in your mind. It makes you believe, I guess you could say, it makes you believe your own hype. Pride is self-destruction. Then in 6:4, Paul tells us to test your own actions. In other words, stop looking sideways. Stop comparing. Stop competing for attention. Stop trying to outrun someone else's race. Instead, we need to look inward, look upward, examine our hearts, examine our motives, measure our character not against somebody else, but against Scripture, not against society. Then finally in 6:5, he says to carry your own load. Each one should carry their own load. Paul says, run your race, not someone else's. Stay in your lane, your ministry, your calling, your assignment, your gifts, your stories. God made you special. He made you in His image. He gave you something unique. There's not one single person that is the same. Two twins can look exactly the same. And coming from my experience, let me tell you, I have one twin that is the most brilliant kid in the world. He has straight A's. The other one, let's just say not so much. But they're both amazing people. But God gave each one of them their own purpose. So stop looking at others' races and start running the one God gave you to run. Now, I said I was competitive. Well, my whole life, I was in sports, whether it's team sports, individual sports. But as I got older, I got into Taekwondo. And in Taekwondo, there is a competitiveness about it because one of the big parts in the style I study is sparring or fighting. It's actually an Olympic sport. And I'll be honest, I think I may have told the story in here, but if not, great if I have. It just really fits really well in here. There's this one competition I went to here locally, and I think it was in Austin area. The thing with competitions is you have to pay a lot to be able to have somebody kick you and you hit them back. A lot of the money goes towards stuff like the arena and then also for legal stuff. So it's not cheap to do this. Now, this competition, it was kind of small, and there wasn't anybody my age because I was actually a little bit older when I started. And there was this other competitor who was really no one his age. We were both black belts, however, he was like a master. He was like fourth degree. I think I was like a first degree. Normally it's not a big deal, but I could literally hear him from one side of the gym talking to friends or somebody in his group saying, man, I can't believe that I'm stuck having to fight that guy over there. Man, look how old he is. He's only a first degree. Look at me. This is going to be a waste of my money. I'm going to have him knocked down in no time. Well, let me tell you, when I heard that, good honoring sportsmanship kind of fell to the waist, and that's when pride jumped in. Because now I had one goal, and that was to prove him wrong. Let me tell you, the fight was pretty close there for a little bit. I was going after him, he was going after me. I was getting a point, he was getting a point. Eventually, I was getting more points, and he started getting angry. He started losing self-control. He was making dumb mistakes. I kept on getting points. He got more angry. You could just tell his pride just eating him inside, saying, I'm going to beat this guy. I can't believe that I'm losing. Right close to the end of the last round, I step back and he does this weird, a flying sidekick of some sort. It's kind of like Taekwondo's Hail Mary for football. And he comes flying at me, and I literally just step over, knock him down, and he falls to the ground. Well, you know the saying, pride comes before destruction or before a fall. Well, let me tell you, not only did he fall and lose the match, but also got his arm broken. That gentleman allowed pride to get into him. It overwhelmed him. It consumed him. It cost him the match and, you know, a broken arm. And I really, really, really wish I could say that this is where that story ends. As they were putting him on the stretcher, they were wheeling him out, the ambulance was, I'm standing right next to one of my friends, also my instructor, and I'm talking to him and said, man, you see that guy over there? You see how angry he got? You see how dumb he was? The moves he was making? He thought he was going to beat me. Man, I showed him. And as I'm talking, and this is no joke, I feel this little tap on my side. I look down, and there's this little kid looking up at me and going, that's my dad. You want to talk about humility. Suddenly, my pride just kind of melted away. My ego evaporated. That win I had no longer felt like a win. Pride had turned a sport into a sin. It turned my opponent into a victim. It turned my gift God gave me for martial arts into a weapon. It turned my purpose inward. I'll be honest with you, pride is something I'm working with on every day of my life. When it comes to competition, I can truly say no longer do I go into it, if I do ever compete again, do I ever allow pride to sweep into me like it did that day. That young man, whether he knew or not, really had an impact on my life. Let me give you another example of how pride can ruin things. Now, most of you here today probably know the story. Some of you, if Facebook Live is working right now, which hopefully it is, may have not even heard of this group, or at least may have heard the name, a company called Enron. See, in the 1990s and early 2000s, Enron was one of the most admired companies in America. Their CEO, Jeff Skilling, was praised as a genius. The media adored him. Business schools studied him. Wall Street pretty much just worshipped him. He went from a consultant to an executive to eventually the most powerful CEO, not in America, but in the world. He was young, wealthy, brilliant, confident, and unfortunately extremely proud. As Enron rose, so did Skilling's ego. He began to believe that saying things like, I can't fail. The rules, they just don't apply to me. No one can tell me what to do. I'm the smartest person in the room. Well, those who worked with him said that Skilling surrounded himself only with people, well, I call them yes men, and other people who had only worked in the same way he did and had the same pride that he did. Pride pretty much took over that company's culture. Arrogance, it became the atmosphere of the day. Compassion became the measure of value. Competition, it ended up becoming survival. Then soon, pride turned into deception. Enron began hiding billions of dollars in losses. That's billions with a B. They cooked the books. They lied to investors. They lied to employees. They lied to the government. And honestly, I think they even lied to themselves. The facade, it continued all the way up until it collapsed in 2001. Enron eventually had to filed one of the largest bankruptcy in American history. Thousands of employees lost their jobs, people lost their pensions, investors lost billions, and families lost their security. All while it seemed that Skilling was going to walk away with millions. But eventually, if you remember the story, he did get caught. He was arrested, tried, convicted on multiple federal charges. Sentenced to 24 years in prison, although if I remember right, that got reduced, but it still was quite a bit. The fall of Jeff Skilling wasn't because he wasn't smart. It was because he thought he was smarter than everyone else. I'd even argue, including God. There was one analysis, he said this, he said, his pride didn't just destroy him, it destroyed thousands of innocent people. Jeff Skilling's story is more than a business failure. I believe it's a biblical truth on full display. Proverbs 6:18 tells us that pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. Enron wasn't destroyed by competition. It wasn't destroyed by the market. It wasn't destroyed by bad luck. Enron was destroyed because one man believed that he was above accountability, above correction, above the rules. See, that's what happens every time that we allow pride to grow unchecked inside of us. For us, we may not run a multi-billion dollar company. So we may not be losing billions of dollars. But still, pride can destroy marriages. It destroys families. It topples churches. It ruins freedom, friendships. It destroys our spiritual growth. And pride destroys an entire corporation because a leader believed that he was invincible. This is why God warns us in James 4:6. God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Because when a man stands tall in pride, trust me, church, God will bring him down. But when man kneels low in humility, that's when God will lift him up. Now, Proverbs to me is kind of like the Bible's manual for how not to make mistakes. It's an idiot's proof guide, I guess you could say. Back in Proverbs 27:2, it teaches us, it says, let another praise you and not your own mouth. You see, pride is loud, whereas humility is quiet. So if you have to brag, you probably don't have as much to brag about as you think. Then Proverbs 11, humility comes wisdom. Pride leads to disgrace because pride prevents correction. Humility, it leads to wisdom because humility is teachable. The Bible is full of examples of famous people who have got consumed by pride. Just a couple of them. Let's look at Satan himself. In Isaiah 14 and in Ezekiel 28, this is when we find the first sin in the universe, which is pride. Lucifer said, I will ascend. I will be like the Most High. He stopped wanting to reflect God. He wanted to instead replace God. And that's what pride always wants. It always wants to be first. It always wants to be, you know, the lead in the play, to be Joshua. Look at Adam and Eve. We all think that, you know, well, what caused Adam and Eve's sin? Well, they ate from the fruit. Well, it wasn't the fruit that they ate. I know that's what we teach our kids, but instead, what took them down was their pride. Remember, Satan says, if you eat this, you'll be like God. Why in the world would you think that he would not want you to have the same knowledge? He's keeping you back. Just go ahead. Eat the fruit. Pride promises elevation, but we know what happens. It actually produces devastation. We all know the Tower Story of Tower of Babel. It was a pride in achievement. They said, let us make a name for ourselves. Let's rise above into the heavens. Pride always seeks to brand itself, try to elevate itself, to immortalize itself. So we know what happened to those people. He didn't allow them to continue. He took that pride and snuffed it right out. He scattered them to all the corners of the earth. And finally, the disciples. I guess you could say they had a pride in religion. If you remember the story in Luke 22, they were arguing about who is going to be the greatest, who is going to sit on the right hand of side of God. Imagine being in the presence of Jesus and worrying about your ranking. Well, you know what? We still do the same thing, don't we? We say things sometimes like, well, who's more spiritual? Who knows more scripture? Who prays better? Who actually gives more? Who brings the most to be saved? Jesus, however, says, the greatest among you must be first a servant. In 1 Corinthians 9:24 through 27, Paul says, run in such a way as to get the prize. You see, having competition in itself is not sinful. Its ambition in itself also is not sinful. Drive is not sinful. Wanting to do the best you can do is not sinful. Wanting to take first place is not sinful. The desire to excel is not sinful. God created humanity with a desire to grow, to do better. Paul constantly uses imagery like he did in 1 Corinthians telling us to run a good race. He doesn't tell us that we should be lazy to run a lazy race. He doesn't say, you know what, just run the race halfway. That's good enough. No, he tells us instead that we need to run with a purpose, to run with discipline, to run with intensity. Competition done for God's glory, I believe it strengthens us. It helps create character. It shows our excellence. It helps us develop perseverance and honor, integrity, and commitment. So then when does competition become a sinful thing? It's when your value is when you need to win to feel valuable. So when you are winning not because you want to compete, because you want to see how good you are and show how hard you work. It's when you want to compete because you want to feel valuable. It's when your value is not an achievement. Your value is not performance. Thing is, your value is not should not be for applause, and your value should not be decided based upon your victory. Your value is determined by your identity in Christ. And in Galatians 6:4, Paul gives us a heart check. He says, test your own action. So here's are the questions that we should ask when we're trying to determine, is this competition healthy or is this sinful? First of all, ask your question, did I honor God? Did I grow in character? Was my heart humble? Did I compete in love? Did I lift up others? Man, I think back to that fight and even that audition. I did not do it to honor God. I didn't do it to try to grow in character, and I definitely didn't do it to be humble. I did because I wanted to be number one. I wanted to be the best. I want to prove to this guy that I was better than him. I didn't reflect Jesus, and I sure didn't obey Christ. See, there's a big difference between look what I did and look, thank and Lord, thank you for your help in doing my best. Who better to be able to brag or to be able to boast? Who should have been able to be prideful was Jesus. But instead, what did we see? We didn't see him boasting or saying that he was better than Satan or anybody else. He didn't look to the Pharisees and say, man, I know the law a lot better than you do. I'm much better than you are. He did not do that thing. Instead, the person who created the world, the one who holds the universe together, he washed feet. He welcomed children. He embraced the broken. He touched lepers. He served sinners. And yeah, ultimately, he died and hung on the cross. So let me tell you, church, if the King of Kings can humble himself in humility, why in the world can't you and I? Philippians 2, 3 through 5 says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourself. We need to celebrate other success. We need to be able to be willing to seek coaching. We need to stop competing against others' potentials and instead compete against our own. We need to pray before we strive. And we need to worship God with our excellence. Hebrews 12, 1 through 2 says this. Says, let us run with endurance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus. Not on other runners, not on the crowd, not on critics, not on comparisons, but on Jesus. Because Jesus sets the course. He sets the pace of the race. He empowers the runners. And he waits at the finish line. So the real issue today is not, are you competitive? Because all of us, in one manner or another, is competitive. The real issue here is, why do you compete? God isn't judging your scoreboard. He is judging your heart. Pride wants a spotlight. Competition strives to honor Christ. Pride races against people, whereas competition races towards the purpose. Now, some of you today probably need to surrender something. Perhaps it's your pride. Maybe it's your desire to always compare yourself to somebody else. Perhaps it's your insecurity or your ego. Or maybe it's the pressure to prove yourself or the need to be first. Jesus says, however, in Matthew 11, 28, come to me, lay it down, and find rest. So therefore, trade pride for peace. Comparison for contentment, competition for calling, and ego for identifying in Christ. And as we get ready close today, if you've never given your life to Christ, or if you have and you've just never taken that step, maybe it's pride that's keeping you to walk forward. Maybe you sit there today and say, you know what? I don't need to come up. I don't need to be baptized. I'm good enough. That's pride talking. Toss away that pride. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Don't delay. I urge you today, come. Lay down that pride. Take up humility. Come run your race with freedom, joy, and grace. Come, if you will.